Bob Iger has positioned this really about the future of TV and the way people view, and he's launching what will be 3 online services in the U.S. He's got Hulu. He's going to take majority control of that. He's launching ESPN's online arm next year, and then in 2019, this Disney-branded service. So he's created a sort of a 3-pronged strategy with something for kids, for sports fans, and for adults. And the Fox content's a big part of that last piece, the Hulu part.
South Korea launches a charm offensive in China. President Moon Jae-in this week pulling out all the stops on his first visit to Beijing. Moon is bringing a huge entourage of diplomats, businessmen, and some of South Korea's biggest stars. Beijing has boycotted South Korean goods from cars to cosmetics. Analysts say the quarrel has cost South Korea billions in lost revenues. Moon is now keen to get things back on track with a list of new trade deals on offer.
Russia's president has leapt to the defense of his U.S. counterpart, Donald Trump, hurling accusations at the American's opponents and lamenting what he called the, quote, spy mania gripping Washington. The Trump campaign is being investigated for collusion with Russia. Vladimir Putin was speaking at his annual year-end news conference in Moscow. Asked by a reporter what he thought about Trump's record in office, Putin says it wasn't for him to judge, but that he, quote, saw significant achievements from the Trump administration.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's December 15th, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got a really good show for you today. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift. We're going to be talking a little bit about some airline news, including a big move at United Airlines in the PR department following the forcible removal of a passenger earlier this year. We'll tell you what's going on there. And Delta making some news as well this morning as you get ready for your holiday vacations. And Paul Nolte is in the house as well. We'll be talking about the economy and our portfolios. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 42 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well around the globe this morning. In Europe, markets are generally lower with the DAX and the CAC off by about a quarter. The FTSE is up just a fraction. In Asia this morning, markets are also lower with the Nikkei off more than 0.5%. The Hang Seng is off more than 1%. Oil this morning trading at about $57.44 a barrel, which is up about 39 cents. Some news that's happening this morning. First, with the global inequality, a report out shows inequality stabilizing at high levels in most countries, despite gains among the poor in China and much milder disparities in income and wealth in Western Europe. The World Inequality Report 2018 has been released this morning. It's based on a massive collection of data compiled by an international team of researchers. It shows inequality has soared since 1980, although the global top 1% saw their share of global income slip slightly after the financial crisis to just above 20%. It says inequality will likely widen in the future. The data indicates the share of global income going to the bottom 50% has risen slightly in recent years to 9.7%. thanks to gains in populous China and India. But 9.7% compared to 20% for the 1% is the headline number from that. Republican Marco Rubio's potential defection over tax credit for low-income parents has put a speed bump in the GOP's plans to push their tax bill through the Senate. Before Christmas, perhaps, the Florida senator says he'll vote against the $1.5 trillion bill unless House and Senate negotiators expand the tax credit that low-income Americans can claim for their children. Two other Republicans are iffy on this just because of their health. John McCain is in the hospital with complications from chemotherapy treatment. There's another senator from the South who's been out for several months with some prostate and urinary tract issues, and he is out of action as well. So it remains to see, be seen what the final vote might be on this, but there might be a little bit of a nervous condition happening among those who are hoping that this gets done sooner than later. And that's what we'll talk first with Paul Nolte about this morning. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Paul, with us from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Do you think this uneasiness over whether this is going to go through is impacting markets?
Just a little bit. I mean, if you look at the markets yesterday, minute by minute, we traded reasonably well until mid-afternoon when some of the issues with Marco Rubio and others came out and started putting in jeopardy the fact that this was going to be smooth sailing and easy passage. So the market sold off a little, as much as we've seen the market sell off at any point in the last, really, year. So down slightly, but nothing to really get worried about from the long-term perspective.
Susan Collins, another Republican that hasn't said how she's going to vote on this, whether or not she's going to continue her yes vote, which she voted previously. But if this doesn't get done, I think that's the big question.
That is the bigger issue, and certainly you saw stocks that are more impacted by tax legislation, those that are in higher tax brackets or smaller cap stocks. The non-multinationals really got hit hard yesterday, and the financial stocks actually got hit pretty hard yesterday and day before, more on the interest rate picture than anything else. But the lack of maybe rolling back some of the regulations and so on impacted the financial stocks as well.
Well, I don't want to make anything sound like doom and gloom because the economy really is still kind of kicking along, isn't it?
Oh, the economy is doing very well. When you look at the economic surprise index, meaning as those economic releases are coming out, are they above expectations? We're at highs that we haven't seen in a couple of years. So the economy really is going much better than a lot of people anticipated. We're seeing estimates from the Fed that we could see 4% growth in this quarter, which would be a big surprise, higher, and part of the reason why the Fed went ahead and raised rates this week.
Yeah, I always like when you talk about the economic surprise index, wondering if at some point when it's go south if a pie comes out and just smacks you in the face at some point. But
it is a surprise to people. And, you know, again, when you talk about economists, that's their job is to prognosticate. And because that surprise index never is quite flat, it means the economists are either very optimistic or very pessimistic, but very rarely make the mark.
Well, I want to talk more about the economy and the Fed's decision this week when we come back. Paul, hang on. We'll continue with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Our regular Friday talk with Paul.
Listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 522. Welcome back to the opening bell. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Our regular Friday talk with Paul. Paul, they did it this week. The Federal Reserve up a quarter point.
It was so expected. It was, I think, the chances of it actually getting done, I think, were about 101%. So yeah. It was really not expected. You really didn't see the markets move much on the news.
The exciting part, I think, for all of us was watching Janet Yellen, what's probably her last news conference. She had a lot to say about the economy and Bitcoin and all kinds of things.
She was she got quizzed pretty good. And really, when you looked at the comments, there was a couple things that were, I don't want to say disconcerting, but something that really was incongruous with what we're seeing from the data. They're very comfortable with raising rates next year. They're looking at 3, maybe 4 rate increases. And when we got the CPI numbers that came out that morning, the CPI numbers were not all that good and indicating that there are still price weaknesses, if you will, in the economy. And so we're not really looking at big inflation numbers. And that's, I think, still the debate within the Fed, something called the Phillips curve, the relationship between wage inflation and jobs. Is not there. It's a very flat curve, if you will. And that's something that the Fed has really kind of wrestled with over the last year or so and will continue to do so going forward.
She talked a little bit about Bitcoin, about being careful in that area. And also stock prices being overvalued, way overvalued.
And that's those, not so much Bitcoin, but yes, Bitcoin is following the curve of the tulip mania, the 1700s. Yeah. So it's something that right now is just, it's on everybody's mind. We talked about it last week, and people are calling trying to say, how do we get into Bitcoin? And that's a warning flag right there to maybe steer clear. But when we take a look at the rest of it, it still looks good. But the stock market has been one of the concerns for the Fed because that's really where we're seeing the result of easy monetary policy of the last 9 years or so. It's served to really boost not necessarily the economy or inflation, but really asset prices. And that's what we've seen. And it's part of the reason why we're a little bit concerned going forward with the rate increases by the Fed as well as the reduction in their balance sheet, is it could negatively impact asset prices as they go through this unwind.
So people are calling, asking about Bitcoin?
They are. They're, you know, certainly it's hitting maybe not the front page, but certainly the front page of the business news. Mm-hmm. We hear it on the radio a lot, see it on TV a lot. So it's very much top of mind. And the fact that it's gone from $1,000 at the beginning of the year to $16,000 to $18,000, that's a huge move. And there's been some money made, but people are trying to figure out how do I get involved in it. But yeah, it's not something that you can just go to your local broker and say, yeah, give me 5 Bitcoin.
What are you telling people if they're wanting to get into this?
My first question to them is, do they understand what Bitcoin is? And usually the response is, I have no idea what it is. And the first rule of investing is at least understand what you're buying. Mm-hmm. And if you really don't understand it, steer clear. There are over 100 different cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin is obviously the most popular, but it's also the first one to market. If we go back and remember MySpace ahead of Facebook, AOL ahead of anything else in the way of the internet, the first to market is usually not the winner. So Bitcoin being first to market in this cryptocurrency, probably not going to be the winner over the long run, but we've got a long way to go before this becomes more mainstream, if it becomes mainstream at all.
Yeah, and one of the warning signs I saw this week in the paper, the folks who are, you know, mortgaging their lives to get money to go and buy Bitcoin. That's kind of the same thing that happened in the 1990s, isn't it?
In the 1990s with technology, I'm not quite old enough to remember the 1700s, but, you know, again, the same type of thing went on with the tulip mania. We saw it in Mississippi land in the 1800s in the U.S. And you look at those curves of prices and time, Bitcoin follows those bubbles almost exactly.
Got a question for you this morning from a listener. They want to know what first in, first out is and whether it's going to be affected by the tax bill.
Well, whether it's going to be affected by the tax bill is up for debate yet. We still aren't quite sure how everything is getting reconciled here. So it'll yet to be determined. But first in, first out means when you are buying something, you're buying shares of ExxonMobil, Walgreens, and you buy it over some time, so you've got multiple purchases. When you go to sell it, you have to sell the shares that you bought the longest time ago, the first shares that you bought. And usually that means those are the ones that have appreciated the most. I bought it 10, 15 years ago at $5 a share. It's now $100 a share. So now you have to pay the capital gain on the difference. And what you normally would do, you have a couple choices when you go ahead and sell today. You can use average cost, you can use first in, first out, or last in, last out. So you get to choose how you do it. And usually last in, first out means that you're selling the highest cost, lowest profit shares, and so that reduces your tax bill. So if you're forced to go in, first out, you know, certainly some people that have held shares for 30, 40, 50 years, you know, grandma still owns Exxon at $10 a share and it's selling at $80. That's a huge tax bill. So without being able to determine which shares I'm selling could affect your taxes, and ultimately you're going to pay higher capital gain tax.
So we will keep a watch on first in, first out. That could be a big deal if it's in the bill.
Absolutely.
Paul, always good talking with you. This is the last time I'm going to see you before the holidays, so have a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year, and we're very appreciative that you are taking part in the opening bell. We like seeing you every week.
Thank you very much, and have a good holiday yourself.
All right. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more about Paul at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Redbox, the local DVD rental kiosk company, officially launched its new streaming service to compete with Netflix and Amazon. The new service, called Redbox On Demand, offers more than 7,000 movies and TV shows starting at $4 for a 2-day rental. Unlike Netflix and Amazon, it doesn't require a monthly subscription. Sears, which has struggled to keep pace with online players like Amazon, is now working with Amazon to sell some of its goods. Sears announced its plans to sell its Die Hard brand of tires and batteries with the e-commerce giant. And yesterday, the FCC voted to repeal net neutrality, a move that many in the tech community oppose. Repealing net neutrality now gives internet providers the power to potentially speed up, slow down, or block certain websites. The New York Attorney General announced he is suing to stop the decision. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagono.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition. Some aviation and travel news this morning. Delta Airlines has picked Europe's Airbus over Boeing for a huge order of new jets. Delta said yesterday that it will order 100 Airbus A321 NEO jets with a sticker price at $12.7 billion. Take an option to buy another 100 jets, a deal that Chicago-based Boeing had hoped to land. Financial terms of the order have not been released, so it's not known how much Delta will actually pay Airbus. There's some news involving Chicago's United Airlines this morning and some other news involving Delta. And let's welcome in via Skype this morning Brian Summers, who's a business airline reporter at Skift. Brian, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. And let's start first with United. Big change in the PR office there.
Yeah, the head of PR at United arrived a couple of years ago. He came from Starbucks. Before then, he was at U.S. Airways, and he had a pretty stellar reputation. He may still have one, but his goal was to try to make United a kinder, gentler, friendlier airline. In some ways, he succeeded. The problem is that elephant in the room, and everybody knows what happened in April right there in Chicago. This Dr. Dow incident, United sort of bungled the public relations response. It was going to be a problem no matter what. But if you remember, United didn't apologize in the beginning. They blamed the passenger, and that caused many more problems than needed. Now, I should mention that the PR person who's leaving United has said he's leaving to spend more time with his family. The airline says that he wasn't let go. It was his choice. But regardless, United is going to start fresh next year.
Can we read between the lines here and suggest that maybe he the guy that maybe had the point for this and was responsible?
If you're not in the room at United, it's hard to know. United has had trouble with public messaging for maybe a decade or so. This is not new. So it's really hard to know whose fault it was. The public messaging after the Dow incident, but we do know it will probably be taught in PR classes for years to come of exactly what not to do after a crisis.
In your opinion, how have things changed at United? Are they back on track with this? Have they improved this part of their business?
Well, we know that United's finances haven't changed at all since the Dow incident. You know, people will say that they don't want to fly United for some reason or another, but the bottom line is that when United becomes $2 or $3 cheaper than American, people book on United again. You know, travelers have short memories. It's probably not that big of a deal going forward. But if you remember, for about a six-week period, it was a real disaster for the brand.
What's your feeling on this? Do you think that the help wanted sign is out? Are they going to try to hire somebody to turn things around or at least to be a little bit better in this area?
I imagine they'll hire a new vice president or senior vice president of corporate communications. And hopefully the airline will interact a little bit more with journalists, be a little bit more proactive. And there are some good things going on at United. I think the product is getting better. And the airline just has to do a better job of explaining that to travelers, often through the media.
You mentioned that they should do a better job of interacting with journalists. I know as one here, and maybe you could talk about your own interactions, but they seem to have their favorites that they talk to, and they're not generally friendly across the board with everybody. Is that what you mean there?
Yeah, I found other airlines to be a little bit more proactive, a little bit friendlier. There's some very good people at United. They're probably listening right now. If you need something from them that's important, they can usually do it. But yeah, you know, we'll have to see if things change.
Let's talk about Delta Airlines. Delta is making a change in terms of fares or fees for checked baggage on international flights. What are they doing?
Yeah, Delta is going to charge some passengers, the people that buy the cheapest tickets, for checked baggage to go to Europe. So since 2008, most airlines have charged for checked luggage within the United States. Passengers have gotten used to it. But if you're flying to Europe or Asia or deep South America, the bags are still free. For most passengers, bags are still going to be free. But if you do buy one of those cheapy fares, and they're usually pretty cheap, you're going to have to pay for bags at the airport, and it won't be inexpensive. It's going to be $60 per bag one way. So that's a lot more than domestic. That means if you do plan to check a bag, you should be very careful to know what you're buying.
Do you get a sense of why they're doing this?
Well, you know, there's some airlines. One of them is called WOW Air. It's based in Iceland, that charge for bags already. And what Delta says is we'd like to match their fares. You know, we don't like to be more expensive than a WOW Air. But if we're going to match their fares, we have to match their products too. So it's about basic fairness, I think.
Do you think this is something that might catch on over at United? United has one of these cheapy air fares too, don't they?
Yeah. You know, Delta is generally the first U.S. airline to do anything innovative. Passengers may not see this as being innovative, but essentially it is. I think that we'll see American and United copy airlines. Like any big company, are very wary about saying what they're going to do in the future as far as pricing. So they can't telegraph it, but one day I think American and United will come out and say we're doing the same thing.
And it probably goes to that we should probably warn people to be very careful about fees. This comes just a couple of weeks after the Department of Transportation killed one of the rules requiring airlines to disclose all of their fees up front. So this is something that travelers could really get caught up with, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, every traveler needs to make sure that they understand what the fees are going to be. I'm a professional. Sometimes it's hard for me to know exactly what I will be charged and when. I know people don't believe this, but the good news is that the actual airfares right now are historically cheap. You know, you might pay $40, $50, $60 for a one-way domestic ticket. And so even if you do add all those fees, including the unexpected ones, you might be paying less all in for your ticket than you did 10 or 20 years ago.
I heard something recently that when this year is over, the airlines will have made something like $28 billion on fees, ancillary fees, which is more than they make actually flying with airfare.
Yeah, you could say that ancillary fees is something that saved the airline industry in the U.S. and Europe. This is still, people don't believe it, but it's still a low-margin business. Before, it wasn't much of a business at all, and now at least airlines can make enough money to keep going and invest in the product.
I know, speaking of making money, you've been writing about whether or not airlines should consider spinning off their loyalty programs to make some money. What have you found?
Yeah, there's one analyst who believes that airlines would be a lot better off spinning off their loyalty programs into a separate company. So United's Mileage Plus program, which is now owned and operated by United, would be owned and operated by a third party. They'd pay United a boatload of cash to run it. The problem is that, you know, airlines need their loyalty programs and they need to run them themselves. And they also need the data about their customers. And so if you have a third party running your loyalty program, you don't have that very close relationship with customers that you would prefer.
And that data is what about customers?
Who you are, what your preferences are, where you flew last year, where you flew the year before, stuff like that. Maybe what ancillary stuff you bought, if you used your miles, what you used them on, just all types of things like that.
Do you think there would be a consumer revolt if more of these if programs went over to third parties?
Well, you know, we've seen it happen in the past. Air Canada needed cash about a decade ago, and they sold their loyalty program off. You know, for customers, it's been okay. The people that have complained at Air Canada is the airline itself for that reason of not having data about their customers. And Air Canada is actually going back in-house with their loyalty program in 2020. So about 12 years after the experiment started, they've said, nope, we have to run our own loyalty program again.
Brian, always good chatting with you. Safe travels when you're out there.
Great. Thank you so much.
Brian Summers is an airline business reporter for Skift. That's at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com, where you can also sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report, Skift.com/airline. And make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This morning, Dow futures up 47 points, NASDAQ futures up 12, S&P futures flat. Oil trading a little higher this morning, $57.41 a barrel, up about 0.5%. Let's get the latest on agriculture, commodities now, and Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. As we continue to watch weather in South America, you know, it's, again, proof that agriculture is truly global, because we spend more time this time of the year looking at weather in South America than we do looking at weather here in North America. And still concerned about lack of rain in Argentina. And they grow a lot of soybeans, and so the soybean market has been it traded higher yesterday. It was up 1.2%. But the wheat market firmed, and that was kind of unusual because we have such a global supply of wheat. It's tough to get any kind of an increase in the wheat price.
You were with the Secretary of Agriculture this week.
Spent about an hour and a half in his office on Wednesday. And the more I hear from this man, the more I like him, because he understands agriculture. And he's the first Secretary of Agriculture to come from the state of Georgia. I describe him as a good old down-home boy, because he's been in politics, he's been in agribusiness, and now he's the Secretary of Agriculture, and very optimistic. He thinks that we are going to get a NAFTA deal that will maintain the strength in agricultural commodities, not only in the United States, but in the other two partners of NAFTA, and of course that's Canada to the north, Mexico to the south. He's also optimistic about getting a farm bill finished in 2018. I think the deadline on the new farm bill is something like we have to have it put together by the end of September next year. That would avoid going back to the old farm bill that was written, I think, back in the 40s or 50s. So he's optimistic on both of those, and he has thus far traveled to 30 states in the first year that he's been secretary, and he does that so he can hear personally from farmers and agribusiness people on what their concerns are. And he will be airing the full interview on the Saturday morning show on December 30th, because this is the year end, looking back, looking ahead, and then sharing his thoughts on what he sees for America's farmers and ranchers.
NAFTA and the Farm Bill, do you get the sense that he has the president's ear on those issues?
I think he does. I asked him, I said, when you sit down for a cabinet meeting in the White House, does agriculture get any attention? And he said, oh, yes, it gets attention. And he said, Donald Trump doesn't know that much about agriculture, but he knows it's an important part of the economy. So he's pretty optimistic on getting things done in the next year.
Well, we'll be looking forward to hearing that interview. What's on the program tomorrow, Orion?
Well, tomorrow morning, again, we're going to talk markets, but we're going to talk to Alice in Dairyland, Wisconsin's ambassador for agriculture. Program has been going for 70 years, and she is just a great ambassador. She's here to talk about Christmas shopping for something special from Wisconsin, like cheese and like cranberries and like all the other crops produced by our neighbors to the north. So she's going to be with us on the Saturday morning show.
We'll be listening for that, too. Warren, have a great weekend.
You do.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. The morning show tomorrow with Orion and Max Armstrong begins at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, outlook for today, the Federal Reserve Industrial Production Report comes out for November. Treasury also releases international money flows data for October. Also, today is the last day to sign up for health insurance coverage for 2018 on healthcare.gov. That's Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And we could see a space launch today. SpaceX will try to launch another Falcon rocket today on a supply mission to the International Space Station. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, December 15th.